Well, that was a choice of mine on July 30th, 1980. It was either going to be a gift, and I could choose to open it, or I could choose to let it sit there. And I chose to open it. I chose to embrace, you know, that day and everything that happened with that day.
Happy Thursday, folks. Hope you're doing all right. I'm your host, Mason Gravely, by the way, and thanks for tuning in. This episode is an oldie but a goldie. It is with Jeff Glassbrenner, and Kurt is hosting. This is from 2016, but the principles apply. The inspiration is evergreen, and the stories are always great to hear. Jeff has huge goals. He has summited many of the seven summits. He has skied to the both North and South Pole, and he just, you know, he's very inspiring. And on top of all that, he has one leg, so he's doing all these things. You know, I often complain about knee pain, which is, you know, it's true, it's a thing, but I have my legs, and there is still so much we can do. So, you know, whether, you know, this is a story as old as time, people inspiring us who are overcoming challenges and overcoming adversity, but if you're in the middle of a midweek slump or you're out there on an adventure somewhere, which I know a lot of y'all are, this is just a story to keep you going through the day, get you through this week, and get your sights set on the next adventure high to look forward to, whether that's a weekend experience or literally the next seven summit that you're climbing. So thank you for tuning in. No ads today. If you're interested, we do have a Patreon account where you can support the show monthly, and we also have a donation page where you can donate one time. All that's in the show notes. But thank you so much for listening, and let's get right into it.
Hello and welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. This is your host, Kurt Linville. I have a wonderful guest for you today. Jeff Glassbrenner just returned from Nepal, where he summited Everest successfully on May 18th. Jeff has been an athlete for most of his life. He has completed 25 Ironman triathlons. He's also a motivational speaker, professional basketball player, and a world champion in some various areas. And here's the kicker. Jeff did all this with only one leg. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, Jeff, you also were a Paralympic athlete three times, and you won multiple golds. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so three-time Paralympian, two-time world champion, and a five-time national champion. So for wheelchair basketball, I also have an individual world scoring record. So in the 2004 national championship game, the game, I scored a record-setting 63 points and had 27 rebounds. And just to prove that I am a team player, I want everyone to know that I did have one assist. Very important.
One assist. Good. That's awesome, man. So we got to hear this story. I mean, you've done so much with your life, and we're going to run out of time to talk about all of it. But I really want to talk about what you just completed. I would like to start out by talking about Everest. So how did you get started climbing?
So I got started climbing. I was introduced to climbing at Earth Treks in Golden, Colorado by an organization called Paradox. And so they have a disabled climbing. They give instructions and they have different camps. And so I was introduced to go there. My daughter has a seizure disorder. And so that's why we moved to Colorado about 2 years ago. And so it was something that we could do together. And it was amazing for those 2 hours that we get to climb in the gym. She never had a seizure. And so it's something we could do. And then after the first night, the team said that, hey, well, one of our teammates broke a leg and they were going to go climb the Grand Tetons in 2 days. And so they're like, you know, you seem like you're in good shape. You want to go climb with us? And I was like, yeah, I've never won for turning down an opportunity. So 2 days later, we went and climbed the Grand Tetons and just really fell in love with climbing and mountaineering. And then I loved it so much that two years ago that I climbed and summited Aconcagua, the highest point outside of the Himalayas at 22,842 feet. And kind of the interesting thing there is that was my first time ever sleeping in the tent. So me
wow.
And my life, Yeah. So me and my life, I've always been trying to, you know, push the envelope, get out of my comfort zone and to try different things and see how far I can go.
Oh, that's really fun. So Aconcagua down in South America.
Yes.
Well, congratulations on that one, too.
Thank you. That was the start of it. And then at the summit of Aconcagua, my guide, he'd actually summited Everest without oxygen. And he's like, there's no reason why you can't do this. He goes, you're physically, you know, in shape enough. You just have to get a different leg made to make that to happen. And so that started my climbing bug, and that started my drive to stand on the highest point in the world. And so after that, I was full force onto Everest.
Well, congratulations on your Everest climb and Aconcagua and all the other peaks that you've summited in the process. Really cool stuff. So tell us, what is it like to climb Everest?
That's a lot of hard work. For one, it takes a lot of preparation. And so I had to do a lot of training in and around Golden, where I live. So it's nice that I had a lot of 14ers there to climb and to practice with and to try the new equipment and my new leg. And so, yeah, to climb it, it took 2 months door to door. And so I left the Denver airport on the 31st of March, and then I didn't return until just about the last part of May. And, you know, all along through there, you know, the first 2 days we were in Kathmandu, we were just getting our gear check and we were getting everything prepared, and we got to see, you know, some of the sites in Kathmandu. And we got to witness firsthand, you know, some of the devastating effects of, you know, last year's earthquake, where 9,000 people died and pretty much destroyed that city. And so that was really interesting to see and to be a part of. But then we went from Kathmandu, we flew to Lukla, which is considered one of the most dangerous airports in the world. So both ends of the runway are kind of ramped. And so we're taking this twin engine plane, and our whole team is in there, and we made a successful landing, and the pilot didn't even turn off both of the engines, you know, for fear of not getting the other one started. So that's at 9,400 feet in Lukla. So from there, we got out of the plane real quickly and got our gear together, and then we started the 9-day, 40-mile trek to base camp. And that was pretty neat just to... we had to do that to walk slowly to acclimatize and get our body used to, you know, the higher altitudes. It was pretty neat all throughout, you know, the tea houses that we stayed at. There's lots of little kids, and I always wear shorts when I can. And so they're walking up and running up and touching my leg. And it was really neat. They'd never really seen that before. And so I think it was great to be there, a part of that, and have, you know, them maybe see something a little different.
Oh, yeah. That is, it's really cool when you can interact with people from around the globe and touch lives and provide some sort of an exchange. You know, I have not been in Nepal, but I did 5 weeks in Kenya, and we ended up in some areas that were very, very remote. And the children there had not seen anyone with white skin. So it was a similar thing.
Right.
They would come running out and try to rub it off, and they rub their fingers together. And it was just wonderful to interact with them and to make that connection. So really cool.
Yeah. So that was amazing. Then we arrived at base camp, and then the tent living began. So at the lower parts in base camp, we each had a 3-person tent, and just one, you know, each person had a 3-person tent. And after that, we, you know, got all of our gear in place, and then we went through 2 puja ceremonies. And so the puja ceremonies is when the, like, a high lama will come in and the monks will come in and give us blessing to go, you know, have safe passage up the mountain. And it's usually about a 2-hour ceremony. And so they bless the food and they bless our equipment. And it's really a neat experience to be a part of. But then after the puja ceremony, it was kind of like gym class. We all the climbers, there's 10 of us in our group, line up on one side, and then 10 Sherpa line up on the other. And so then we get paired off. And the interesting part is I'm wearing shorts, and everyone can see that I'm missing my leg. And everyone's getting paired off, and I finally get paired off with my Sherpa, and his name was Lakpa Sherpa. He was 21 years old. He had summited one time, and you should have seen the visual disappointment in this man's face when he drew the short straw with the one-legged guy. And So that was kind of interesting at first, but something that I truly expected. Then the 3 days after that, we went and had some technical training through some of the ice fall parts and did some pretty strenuous hikes. And every one of those days, I was the first one back to camp. I was the first one through the technical part. It was really neat. At the end of that 3 days, my Sherpa taps me on the shoulder and he points to Everest and he's like, "We can do it." And I smile. I'm like, "That's why I'm here." And so after that, my leg really was never a problem between the two of us. He knew that I was fully capable of getting up that mountain, and that trust started from that point on.
Mm, that's wonderful. So the climb itself, how did that go for you?
So the climb itself is pretty difficult and pretty long. And so we'd have to do three acclimatization hikes up the mountain. So it's not like climbing Everest where you just start at the bottom and you march your way up to the top. So we had to take the two acclimatization hikes. We'd have to start at midnight. So we'd wake up about 10 o'clock, have breakfast or supper or whatever you wanted. And then we were boots marching on the mountain at 12 o'clock at midnight. And the reason we climb at night is just because the ice fall is more stable with the colder temperatures. And so we start there and we head up with our headlights on and we're crossing ladders and we're, climbing up ladders and all the time we're on our fixed line and all the time we're feeling safe, but all the time that we know that there's seracs above us that could break off at any time. And so the biggest way I can describe the ice fall would be like a 5-hour obstacle course. You're trying to move quickly, efficiently, and safely. About 3 hours into our hike, we heard this big snap or this big whip, and all of a sudden a serac about 30 feet in front of us broke off and landed right on our path. And so if we were 30 feet further up the mountain, I definitely wouldn't be talking to you today. So it was definitely a sobering feeling of knowing that, it's very dangerous. Obviously it's Everest, but it's something that we all signed up for and we kept on moving. And so from there we went to Camp One and we spent the night. And for me, that was my hardest night on the mountain. I woke up to a condition called Cheyenne-Stokes. So it's altitude related. So your respiration rate slows and your heart rate slows, and all of a sudden you get behind on breathing, and you wake up in the middle of the night, and you're just gasping for breath. You think you're suffocating, you think you're drowning. So it was a very kind of weird feeling, and that was the time that I started second-guessing myself. Is this worth it? Is this really what I want to do? I have two kids at home, and so I just I was reminded, at that point, at my low point, something my dad said when I was having a hard time dealing with my disability. He said, "You can either be powerful or you can be pitiful, but you can't be both." Mm. And so from that point forward, I kind of knew which one I wanted to be. And so with those, kind of encouraging or poignant words, I continued on.
Wow. I want to talk briefly about the altitude challenge. You live in Golden. You climbed several mountains before, 14ers and Aconcagua, right?
Right.
So this came as a surprise when this happened, I guess.
For the altitude, the Cheyenne-Stokes, yes, it completely did. I mean, I'd read about it and heard about it, but I'd never experienced it before. And so when it happens, you feel miserable. You feel like you're going to die. Ugh. And so very unique. Luckily, I only had it once. A bunch of my teammates had it every night. And so I was very fortunate to only experience that once. But that once was enough. It was definitely a reminder of, the effects that altitude can bring and have on your body.
Yeah, one reason I wanted to bring it up is a lot of climbers do listen to the show. And it's just a reminder that just because, you've done 25 mountains and the altitude was okay, the 26th might be a different story.
That's exactly it. Yeah, and some of our Sherpas, that's the same day too. We had one of them that summited six times and then all of a sudden had pulmonary edema. And so that was an issue. You wouldn't think that would happen to a Sherpa, but I think that he may have pushed it a little bit hard and got dehydrated or something. But something definitely changed and he had to call it a season. So
wow.
It can happen to anyone.
Sure. Okay, so you've done your Camp One, and I guess you do that three times?
Yeah, so we go from there, then we go up to Camp Two, and then we spent two nights there, and then all the way down to through the Kimbu Ice Falls. And then once we're back at base camp, and we have about 5 days before the second rotation starts. And those 5 days, you're trying to eat and drink as much as you can to kind of repair the body to get back to where you want to be and gain all the weight that you've lost. And then after that 5 days, again, we repeat the same process. We go up to the Kimball Ice Falls. It's about a 5-hour obstacle course through that, I like to call it. And then we went past camp one this time, and then we spent 3 days at camp two, and then one night at camp three, and then we went all the way back down. And then after that, we spent another 5 days trying to rest and recover. And we're waiting for a 5-day weather window is what we're actually waiting for. And so we finally got that that weather window. And we took off for the summit rotation, and we again went through the Kimball Ice Falls, went past Camp 1, and we spent the night at Camp 2. The game plan was to wake up at Camp 2 and head on to Camp 3. Well, we learned that night that the weather window changed, and so we'd be in a holding pattern. Well, that holding pattern turned out to be 6 days at Camp 2.
Wow.
And that was unexpected. I mean, luckily we had resources in place in case something happened. But, you know, as a climber, you know, and as an active person like I am, you know, we sat in the tent like 23 of the 24 hours, you know, just kind of waiting it out. And during those 6 days, I lost about 20 pounds. And so just at the higher altitudes, your body's working so much harder. You don't feel like eating, and you don't really feel like doing much. So, you know, one thing to lose, you know, all that weight is you lose a lot of energy. But for me, it was extra hard because my leg doesn't fit the same if I lose weight. And so I had to be very attentive to that. So normally I don't wear any socks on my stump. This time I had to wear 15 plies of socks on my stump to help,
15.
You know, fill the void. Yeah. So I had, it was kind of different. And so I had to be very attentive, you know, with anything that we have, you know, you have to be flexible and you have to be able to, you know, think on your feet and move forward. But after that 6 days and that big weight loss, you know, we took off to camp three. And we spent the night there at camp three, and we started using oxygen that night. And then we woke up to the morning thinking everything was going to be great, but then there was like 40 to 50 mile an hour winds. And so we were going to take off early in the morning, but we decided to, you know, wait a little bit to see if the winds would die down and make it easier for us. But we waited about 4 hours and then took off. And then like an hour into it, it was pretty much a kind of a whiteout. It was pretty pretty windy, like 50 mile an hour gusts, and it was a challenge. And so for me, that was one of the hardest days that we had on the mountain, going from camp three to camp four. So it was supposed to take us around 8 hours. I think it ended up taking us around 12, just because of the conditions.
Wow.
And so a couple of times we were without oxygen for a little span until we got to our next stash of the oxygen on the mountain. So once we got there, we got to camp four. We were supposed to arrive at 2 p.m, but we didn't arrive until 8 that evening, just because of our delays and our late start and the slower progress up the mountain. And so we were supposed to summit that night at 10 o'clock. We were supposed to leave, but arriving in late at 8 o'clock, we didn't really have that opportunity to rest up and rehydrate. And so we decided to spend a night at camp four. So that's, you know, the death zone, so above 26,000 feet. So that's pretty hard on your body and not really suggested to do for, you know, like prolonged periods. But so we spent the night, didn't sleep much. It was just hard to breathe even on oxygen and to move around and just being in the death zone, you kind of, you know, think about it a lot. But the next day we woke up and had breakfast and tried to eat and drink as much as we could. And then that night we headed for the summit at 10 o'clock that night. And it was cold and crowded, and it took us 10 hours and 25 minutes from camp four to reach the summit. And that whole time we're doing the rest step, you know, we're taking a rest step, locking off our leg and taking three big breaths and then taking another step. And so imagine doing that for 10 hours and like 25 minutes. It was pretty challenging, but the views as the sunlight was coming up were just so incredible.
Wow. So how did it feel to stand on top of Everest?
It felt amazing. You know, I had my mask on and my goggles on, but under that mask and goggles was all smiles and just the most amazing feeling. You know, looking out, they say you could see for almost like 1,200 miles. You know, you could you could see forever. It really felt like I was on top of the world. And I wasn't just there by myself. You know, I had a lot, you know, so many people helped me get to that summit to help me get to the highest point in the world. And so, you know, I really appreciate the support that I had and the love that I had from my family to go after that goal.
Well, congratulations. It's an amazing trip. Not everybody who tries makes it. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. It's an amazing feat that you accomplished. And so I am impressed and amazed anytime someone climbs Everest, you know. So congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Let's contrast that a little bit, Jeff. Let's go back and tell us briefly the story of how you lost your leg and what it took for you to become an athlete and to become active in adventure sports.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in Boscobel, Wisconsin, which is in the southwest corner of Wisconsin, and it's a small farming community. And on July 30th, you know, like most eight-year-old boys, you know, I was a shadow of my dad. So, you know, whatever my dad set out to do, you know, I tagged along or helped out or got in the way in any way that I could. Well, that day we had the task of going out into the hay field and cutting some hay. And so my dad and I get the tractor ready. And I remember we're going out the driveway and my mom yells her usual, you know, "You guys be careful." And we're like, "Yeah, yeah, right, whatever." We got to the hay field and start cutting the hay and we hit a rock. And, you know, there's lots of rocks in the southwest part of Wisconsin, and that's the reason why I'm along, you know, so I could help out my dad. So my dad turned off the tractor and asked me to go do my usual. Well, my usual was to get off of my safe spot, go around the tractor, remove the rock, and remove all the extra alfalfa on the mower, then quickly get back onto my safe spot. So when he did that, I was super happy to help him out, quickly off of my safe spot, did my task, and went to get back on the tractor. But before I reached there, my dad had turned on the machine. In a split second, you know, my life had changed forever. You know, my pant leg became entangled in the power takeoff. If you don't know what the power takeoff is, it's on the back of the tractor. It spins really fast, very powerful, but very unforgiving. Another kind of way to describe it is like the tractor was a large pencil sharpener and my leg was a pencil. You know, in that split second, I just remember laying there on the ground, you know, looking down at my leg, and I could just see a bone sticking out, or just a few seconds earlier, you know, I had my whole leg. I also remember looking to my right, you know, I could see my shoe with my foot still in it. So my dad, you know, quickly seeing what happened to me, quickly turned off the tractor and quickly picked me up. And then luckily had the presence of mind to apply a human hand tourniquet. You know, like the doctors would later on would say that little act right there, you know, saved my life, you know, because I was bleeding out. But the biggest thing that I remember is like crying to my dad. I remember crying because I thought I'd never be able to run or never be able to swim again. As an eight-year-old boy, those were my two favorite activities. And my dad just looked me in the eyes and just said, "Son, let's just get through the day. You know, we got more things to worry about." But from there, they took me to the University of Wisconsin Hospitals, where I spent the next 47 days of my life fighting for it. You know, my heart had stopped in two different occasions because of all the blood loss that was going on. I also had to undergo 13 different operations, you know, to try to rid my body of all those infections. But the thing I remember most about the hospital is leaving the hospital. When I left there, the doctors handed me a sheet of paper with a whole bunch of limits of things that I could and couldn't do. And so, and for me, at the top of that list was sports. So they told me that I couldn't do sports because I was either afraid to hurt myself or hurt other kids. And so that was pretty hard to digest, that piece of paper. And so
after that,
you know, the sad thing about it is I believed everything that was on that list of limitations. I didn't play sports. I didn't do anything until I went to school at the University of Wisconsin, Whitewater. And I discovered wheelchair basketball. And that really changed my life. And it's funny, like I was recruited, not like a lot of college people recruited. I was recruited hopping to the bathroom. This guy stops me in the hallway. He's like, "Man, you're missing your leg." And so right away I'm thinking to myself, this guy must've been the valedictorian of his class. You know, which is obvious, right, buddy? But then he's like, "No, there's a wheelchair basketball team. You should come check it out." And luckily, I did check it out, and it was so amazing. I got to see him play wheelchair basketball for the first time and I got to see how competitive they were, and it was truly amazing to be a part of that. I met my coach like shortly thereafter, and you know, it was kind of, I was lucky because I didn't really have any bad habits developed or anything like that. And so my coach, you know, he stressed to me the only way to get to the top or the only way to be successful at it was to have a strong foundation. So my coach would teach me the very basics, give me a more advanced skill until I perfected the one after that. And after months of training, you know, my coach said that I should try out for the national team. And with lots of hard work and lots of help from others, I made my first national team in 1997.
It, you know, I'm going back to that sheet that they gave you at the hospital. I'm thinking, what were they thinking? You know?
Yeah, today is much different. Now I think, you know, through other people before, there's limitless possibilities. But back then, you know, 30 plus years ago, they didn't want me to get hurt. They didn't want me to hurt other kids or something in the playground. And so it's a different mentality, but it takes, you know, athletes and people like myself and others to prove that anything is possible. And I think that's great. And so my favorite part is mentoring someone else that's lost a leg or someone else that's going through hardships, because, you know, if you truly want to do it, you can truly accomplish it.
Oh, yeah. Well, on that note, tell us about Paradox Sports.
So Paradox Sports is actually a disabled climbing community that provides, you know, instruction and actually really provides us a community of people like-minded. Like if they have a disability, you know, they can pair them up with another amputee. So basically it provides instruction and it helps people get out there. And I think that's the whole point of this podcast is that, you know, no matter what you're into, you can find a mentor, you can find a community, and they'll help you, you know, take it to the next level. And I think that's what Paradox does. That it's done for me and my daughter, and it's also done it for countless others. And so it's based out of Boulder, Colorado, and it was started in 2007. So it's been helping a lot of people, including you know, the wounded veterans that come back and other people with farm accidents or other disabilities in life.
Sure. So do you know what their website is?
Yeah, it's paradoxsports.org.
Paradoxsports.org.
Yep, and so you can check it out. You can either volunteer to help belay someone or to be a mentor. There's even stuff on there that you can donate or be a part in other ways. And so I encourage you all to check that out. Because, yeah, if you see someone with a disability, they want to climb just as much as you do. They're just going to have different instructions or different technology to make that possible.
So, listeners, if you love climbing, give Paradox Sports a try. I think that sounds like an incredible organization. Really, really cool.
It is.
So then you got involved in basketball and you went for the national team and you ended up doing the Paralympic sports. You already told us that you won gold how many times?
So I have 2 gold medals. Yeah. So that's an awesome achievement and something that I am very proud of, because as an athlete, you know, there's no greater feeling of wearing that USA uniform with that gold medal around your neck, you know, listening to the national anthem. You know, my life has always been kind of going for those gold medal moments, whether it's climbing Everest, whether it's doing Ironmans, or whether it's playing wheelchair basketball. It's just going out there and trying to compete at the highest level, no matter what odds you're faced against.
Oh, yeah. And you and I visited a little bit before we started recording the show here, and we were talking about how everybody has challenges. You know, for you, you're an amputee. That's a challenge, right?
Yeah, you can see my challenge, but for other people, it's more of the mental side. And so, you know, when people have injuries or accidents, it's the emotional side or the mental side. You know, oh, how is this person gonna, you know, look at me, or am I gonna be the same? And so, my favorite thing is, like, sometimes I'll go talk to some of the returning vets, and they'll be young, and you know, when they leave, they're just, you know, on top of the world, and they come back, and maybe they're missing a leg, like myself. And the biggest question that I get is, you know, they're all worried about, well, how am I going to be with the ladies? I'm like, well, how are you going to be with the ladies? How were you with the ladies before you left? You know? I mean, so right. it's the mindset. And so they think that everything is going to be the different. But I think that if you, you know, kind of get over the mental side of it, the physical side is not going to be the challenge at all.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
My youngest son, Luke, summited his first 14er last weekend. And
congratulations, Luke. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, as always, you know, the first time to altitude like that, it's a lot of work. He's 12 years old, and he's not a real big guy yet, although I expect he will be soon. But on the way up, I finally had to just say to him, dude, you climb it here, and I tapped his head. You know, I said, your legs are working hard, right? Your lungs are working hard. Your heart is pumping away. Right. But right here, you tap his head again. This is where you climb a mountain.
It is exactly it. And that is, you know, all of it. You know, it doesn't matter the physical part. But if you, you know, wake up being prepared mentally, emotionally, you can pretty much summit anything. And so that's pretty cool that Luke did that. That's awesome.
Well, it, you know, it's a paradigm for all of life. Like you said, you know, you wake up prepared, you go for it. If you have the mental fortitude, you can accomplish anything.
Right, exactly. And if you surround yourself with the right people, too. Like, I've been very fortunate enough to have mentors in everything that I've ever done, whether it be a wheelchair basketball or triathlons or climbing Mount Everest. I think the best way to get successful is to have that mentor. You know, someone that's been there and done that. So it takes away all of the dumb learning out, I call it. And so, and then you can just get on to knowing what you need to know through those mentors. And so I think I've been very blessed to have great mentors in my life. And I hope to be a mentor to other amputees and other climbers as well.
Well, to that end, you are a motivational speaker. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so I do lots of motivational speaking for companies and a lot of insurance companies. So Lincoln Financial is my major sponsor. And so I go in and talk about, you know, my Everest climb. I talk about setting goals and to almost overcoming any odds that are in front of you. And so I go in and talk about, you know, they have disability insurance that they sell. So I'll put that face on that piece of paper that they sell. So it kind of puts the human side of it with that. But yeah, with that, I'm very lucky to go and travel and to share my story and to share my experience about living life at the fullest, and a lot of fun.
So if people would like to invite you to speak, then how can they reach you?
Yeah, so I have a website. It's called teamglass.com. And so check out the website. I also have a book on there. It's called The Gift of a Day. And so invite them to check that out as well. It talks about my adventures post-Everest. And so that's available at teamglass.com.
And that's TEAM, of course, GLAS,
yep.
Just one S. So
yep.
teamglass.com.
I always say, don't make a out of me. Only one S.
Yep, very cool. So I saw the little summary of your book, and I don't have a copy of it, but it looked really, really cool. And I said, man, I got to read this. I'm sure it's something from which I could learn a lot.
Yeah, I think so. It's the aptly named The Gift of a Day. You know, so when something happens to us, anything at all, you know, we have a choice. You know, we can either deal with it positively or we can deal with it negatively. This is a book on how to deal with it positively. The story about, you know, me doing just that, and I encourage everyone to check it out.
So The Gift of a Day, I mean, you gave us a summary of the book, but specifically, what do you mean by The Gift of a Day?
Well, that was a choice of mine on July 30th, 1980. It was either going to be a gift, and I could choose to open it, or I could choose to let it sit there. And I chose to open it. I chose to embrace, you know, that day and everything that happened with that day. You know, it was a bad day, but it also turned out to be the greatest day of my life. You know, if I didn't have that day, I wouldn't have been able to play wheelchair basketball in 42 different countries. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to, you know, meet my wife. I met her at one of the events that I did. So without that bad day happening, I wouldn't have met her. And then we wouldn't have had our two beautiful children, Gavin and Grace. And so I believe that one day can set up everything, but it can set it up for both a positive way, and it can also set it up in a negative way. And so I think that it's a personal choice that when something does happen, you know, can you view it as an opportunity or can you view it as an obstacle?
Hmm. Yeah. Good words, man. So you played basketball professionally in Madrid for 2 years and also a year in Rome. What was that like?
Oh, that's incredible. Because I get to, you know, stay with the team and be with the team. So I wasn't a tourist in those countries. I live like the locals, and I get to truly experience what it's like to be a Spaniard or someone that's living in Rome. And it's just a different way of life. It's not better. It's just different. And so they're really family centered. And so a lot of times after supper, everyone in the family go out for a walk. And so I think we can learn a lot of things like that, that we could have in our society, in our culture. Everything is more family centered and history centered, so to speak.
I think travel does that for people. When you see other cultures and the way that people interact, we can always learn something from that culture. I mean, whether it's Nepal, Rome, Madrid, there's a lot to be learned just by interacting with people from around the globe.
Yes, actually, and wear their shoes, you know, and see what it's like to actually live, you know, where they live and to, you know, have their upbringing and to have their way of life. And so, yeah, I think that's the greatest thing. And like, especially if you're dating or something, the best way to know a person is to go travel with them, because then you can really truly see, you know, what they're like in a different situation. So for sure.
Oh yeah. I often say that you really get to know somebody when you kind of face adversity together. And
yeah,
you know, travel doesn't have to be adversity, but you know, sometimes just getting out of the familiar, you know, you're facing new stuff, a different environment. I mean, it throws you off center, and then who are you, right?
Yeah, exactly. It strips down all of the other stuff, and maybe some insecurities come out, and you'll learn a lot about that person, but usually, hopefully, for the better.
Oh, yeah. I find that happens a lot with people who are not accustomed to backpacking or being in the wilderness for extended periods of time. I love to take kids into the woods and watch them kind of deal with that the whole who am I thing.
Yeah, to get out of their comfort zone for sure. And that's something I really love. And like for Everest, you definitely get out of your comfort zone. You're sleeping three people to a three person tent, you know, at the high camps. And so you're going to the bathroom with your teammates in there. And so it's something you have to get comfortable with. And you definitely get out of your comfort zone in some of those regards.
Wow. Yeah, I'll bet. So a lot of our listeners probably want to try climbing, whether it's rock climbing or mountain climbing, big mountain climbing, expedition climbing. What would you recommend if someone wants to become a climber?
If they want to become a climber, I would say research it and try to find a mentor. If you know someone that knows how to climb, get with that person, because they'll usually steer you in the right direction. Most of the time, you know, they want to take you out and kind of show you the excitement of what it's like to be a climber and the things that you need to know and how to do it safely. And so for me, if you're able to, you know, find someone that's into it, that you'll get a head start in all of it. And so for me, I would research, you know, a climbing gym that's near your area, if that's what you're interested in. Or, you know, there's lots of parks and things like that. Just go out and start hiking. You can learn a lot just by just being out there and being around people that have done that.
Yeah, good word. And especially as soon as you start hitting altitude, it is a different world. There are things you need to know. And so, yeah, I wouldn't recommend people just go do it, not without some instruction first.
No, that's for sure, especially for the higher altitudes. But I mean, there's lots of hikes everywhere. You know, it can be flat, and so you can, you know, find someone that's been there and done that, and then go along with them and learn from them. And so I think that's the best way to get started. You know, look online and see if you can find a trail that's near you, and research what it takes to be able to do that trail.
Sure. Well, man, you are such an inspirational guy. You've inspired me on this show already. What inspires you? What keeps you going?
Yeah, my daughter actually does. She has a seizure disorder, and so she'll have, you know, now about 30 seizures a day. And, you know, you look at her, and whenever she has a seizure, it's amazing to watch. You know, her arms will start shaking, her legs will start shaking. And then it's like someone's taking a light switch and turning her brain off. And then about 30 seconds later, she comes back. And, you know, as she comes back, she's got this big smile on her face. And she goes, "I'm okay, I'm okay." And I know that when I'm having a bad time, when I'm having a bad day, that, you know, I just look at her and, you know, look how, you know, her positive attitude, her, you know, her just wanting to go on and do whatever she wants. Too, you know, that ability to never give up and to never have that bad attitude. And so for me, she's definitely my inspiration. You know, whenever I have a hard time, I think about that, and I think about, you know what, it's not that bad, and then get on and do what I'm doing, because there's going to be life seizures for all of us. It's just, you know, what path are we going to take, you know, bigger and better, or are we going to kind of give up and give in?
So true. You know, I was pondering something about that this morning, just that we can make the most of life right now and choose satisfaction and joy, whatever our circumstance is. And
exactly.
If we do that, then life can always be good. But if we wait...
Life is always good.
Yeah, if we wait for life to change somehow, thinking, oh, it'll be okay when, or later, or once I'm able to, or if I have enough money, or I have enough... if we're putting life on hold, so to speak, then I don't know that a person will ever be satisfied.
You're exactly right in there. Because if you wait for the perfect time, that perfect time will never come. So you need to make the perfect time.
Yeah, today's the day for it. Beautiful story. So I was curious, earlier you said that when she went climbing Earth Treks, she didn't have any of the seizures. Do you know why that is?
Right. Well, I think it's when she's completely engaged that and completely active that she doesn't have it. And so being on a rope, you know, climbing, you pretty much have to be in the moment. And so, so she never had one for 2 hours. So that was a really cool gift to be able to be, a part of that and to take her there. But, you know, when she's off the line and when she's sitting down, then she'll have another seizure. And so you just have to keep her completely engaged and completely safe. But she can do it. You know, she can climb, anything that she wants to. And so I think that was really neat to be able to share that moment with her and to do something together.
I love it. You have any recommendations to parents out there for how to get their kids more interested in adventure sports, climbing? It could be basketball, whatever it is, right? How do you get your kids engaged?
Well, first, let go of the electronics. I have an 8 and a 10-year-old, and so if they want to, they'll play electronics as much as they will or want. But there comes a time where you need to get out and experience things and kind of live life and not just watch it online or do something like that. But for me, it's the biggest thing is just take your kids out and do those activities with them. You know, play basketball with them, go climb or go hike with them. I just think that it's being a role model or being an example. If they see you doing that, you know, I know that my kids, know that I'm into outdoor stuff and that they know that I'm very active. And in the same note, they want to be active and do that stuff as well. My son knows everything about Everest. And so he's excited. He wants to do it. And so I think just being a role model to your kids and to others that, there's possibilities out there, that lie outside the computer. And so if you just get out there and start something, you'll find something that you're interested in and then go for it.
That's cool. You know, I have to throw this out there. It seems like in the U.S. there's an epidemic of obesity. And it's probably the number one thing that keeps people from getting out and having fun, right? But
exactly.
People can start wherever they are, and you don't have to climb Everest, right?
No.
Maybe it's a walk around the block. Maybe it's going to the park and playing Frisbee with your kids. Whatever it is, it's getting out there and starting. I just want to encourage everybody, we've got to get off the couch.
We've got
to get off the couch.
But there's so many activities you can do. You know, just put that remote down and step outside, and there's a whole new world to discover. And so I just think that being a role model for your kids, show them what it's like to be physically active and to be outdoorsy or just to go down and play basketball or something would be a great role model. But, yeah, I live in Arkansas. We went from the 50th fit state to Colorado, the number one fit state. So that was kind of a big switch. It's just different with the food that you eat and taking care of yourself is much different. So yes, obesity is a bad problem, and it just takes, just like Everest, one foot in front of another and a choice,
Oh yeah, absolutely. So what's next on the agenda for you?
So for me, I always say whenever you finish one goal, it's definitely time to start another one. For me, it's called the Explorer's Grand Slam. And so it is the 7 summits. But then you add skiing in the South Pole and the North Pole. And so as far as I can tell, there's only 34 people that have ever done that. So I would like to be on that list of neat things to do and accomplish. So we'll
very
see.
Cool. You've done 2 of the 7 now, or have you done others?
I've just done Aconcagua and now Everest. So I wanted to get Everest kind of out of the way, just because it's super expensive, and I wanted to do it when I was younger, and so I wanted to do that one right away.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was the goal.
So Denali is another challenge. That's going to be a big one.
Yeah, so that potentially my wife and my two sisters are going to try to climb Kilimanjaro with me. And so we plan on doing that next June. And so for me, it's like, yeah, I want to experience that with my family and to kind of, my whole goal is to get people out of their comfort zone. And so my sisters, you know, they're afraid of heights and all that. And so, but we're training and they're doing much better. And we set our goal to do that next June. And so my wife has been climbing 14 years with me training and so with my sisters.
Oh, that is so cool, man. Kili, that's on my list for sure. When I was in Kenya, yeah. I saw Kilimanjaro from Masai Mara off in the distance. And it's like, oh, right. As a climber to see it and not do it.
Yeah.
That's like being a skier at a ski area when you don't have a lift ticket, you know?
Yeah, that's not fun. But hopefully someday you can do that. So.
Well, congratulations for that. I think that's awesome. Kilimanjaro and Africa is absolutely beautiful. Love the country, the countries, love the terrain, love the people. It's a lovely place. So that's going to be a great one, no doubt.
Yeah, my wife's only condition for the climb was we have to do a safari afterwards. So I think that's her reward. I'm like, yes, that sounds great.
Oh, absolutely.
We can do that.
You bet. Yeah, to see the big game animals really being natural in their natural setting is just a beautiful, wonderful thing. So, yeah, you bet.
Can't wait.
Well, hey, let's one more time go over how people can get in touch with you. If they want your book, where do they go?
So they go to teamglass.com. So TEAMGLAS.com. And then the book is called The Gift of a Day. And then also on there, you'll find information on my motivational speaking for businesses or schools or whatever.
And Paradox Sports?
And Paradox Sports is paradoxsports.org. And so, again, that's a disabled climbing community where they pair people up and give instructions, and they also have trips to climb. And so that's why I got introduced to all this crazy fun stuff. So amazing people and amazing organization. So check it out, paradoxsports.org.
Paradoxsports.org. Okay, and you mentioned that you had a really funny, kind of disturbing, funny story for us to close out the show, so let's have it.
Yeah, so I summited Mount Everest and feeling like on top of the world because I was there, but then on the flight home, I kind of got another strike of good luck. I got seated in the exit row, the emergency exit row. And so I'm wearing shorts, and so I get to my seat, super excited about the extra leg room. And all of a sudden, the stewardess noticed that I was an amputee. And so she comes by there and does a double check, and she's like, oh, sir, you can't sit there. And I said, well, no, I'm fully capable of opening up the exit door in case of emergency. I'm fine. And she goes, no, sir, you're going to have to move. And I'm like, well, I just summited Mount Everest. I guarantee I can step up and move that door for you. And she goes, no, you're going to have to move. And so the sad thing about it is I had to move. And so here I was, you know, summiting Mount Everest, the highest point in the world, 29,035 feet. And she thought I couldn't step over someone else 2 feet and open up a door. And so when she looked at my legs, she saw weakness, you know, and that's part of the reason why I like doing all this kind of fun stuff, whether it's basketball or Ironmans or climbing big mountains. It's just, I want to prove to others that, you know, even if you have a disability, that anything is possible. And so it was just kind of funny, disturbing, all of that, that I couldn't open the exit door and I had to move. So that was kind of hard to kind of swallow, but there's teachable lessons, and she wasn't going to bite on any of that. So I moved to another seat and didn't feel sorry for myself, but just kind of questioned some people's motives or some people's belief in someone with a disability.
Yeah, that's a whole nother mountain to climb, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Wow. Well, thanks for educating people, you know, letting us know that it, you know, it's just real. Life is real, and it is what you make of it.
It is.
You know?
And you enjoy it, yes.
Well, if any of you have any idea who this flight attendant was, then make sure she listens to this show.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't American Airlines. It was a carrier based out of Kathmandu. So I think there might be a little different rules or regulations, but it's all right. I'm still going to climb another mountain. I'll tell you that.
Very good. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for being on the Adventure Sports Podcast. I had a ball visiting with you, and congratulations again on all of your feats. But your most recent one, getting Everest checked off the list, I think it's awesome. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and thank you so much for the opportunity. I encourage everyone to get out there and do something, no matter what it is.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.